Hi, Christina. I'm happy to be here with you. I've been looking at tourism and this idea of over-tourism, which has become a hot topic in the media, particularly in Europe, as you're finding places being loved to death. So we've got places like Venice and Dubrovnik and Barcelona, which are in the news for all the wrong reasons. And so as I was looking at this, I was asking myself, what's causing these problems? I'm a tourism academic. I'm a senior lecturer in tourism. I've been studying tourism policy and planning and tourism management for some 20 years now. And normally what we say is all tourism is good, more tourism is even better. So how did we get to the point of being over tourism? And, you know, are people over tourism in the host destinations? So there's certainly a problem with this. And I think that when we look at it, we see difficulties with the stakeholders where the tourists want to experience iconic places and at peak periods. We've got a tourism industry that's not well managed, where international, multinational companies can be bringing tourists into places like Barcelona, and the local communities are not able to control and limit that. And it's particularly exemplified by things like the cruise ship sector, which is a real culprit in some of the problems that are happening. And you also have governments that are about growing tourism, increasing visitation, and increasing the income that come off a tourist. So when you put all of these things together, that's how we've ended up in this situation.
That and aided and abetted by very clever marketing and communication and gloss that just keeps pulling in those tourists.
Yes, the marketing of places is one of the huge issues in over-marketing particular destinations. A lot of my research here in South Australia has been about Kangaroo Island, so you can see that as a place where South Australia has basically labeled that its iconic landscape to compete with the eastern markets to attract tourists. Now, of course, I'm not saying Kangaroo Island is in a case of over-tourism, but just giving that illustration of how marketing works, that you market what's your best assets to use to attract people to a destination. And, of course, the other feature of this, which my colleague at the university, Mariana Segala, talks about, is the role of social media in this. The fact that Instagram and Facebook has the followers of that wanting to be in these iconic places and getting a selfie in these places. And it's almost as if you haven't been there if you don't get that photo at the Trevi Fountain or whatever it is that's the icon that needs to be seen. And that is exacerbating this problem of overcrowding at particular places. And you'll find that some tourists, and of course there's a whole variety of types of tourists out there, some tourists will have to be at that location. Like there's no substitutes for it.
Even the same GPS points and the photo positioning to get it. Yeah, gotcha.
And, you know, some communities of tourists actually love the crowding. You know, that's partly what they like. And so they're not put off by this idea that there's so many people in the one location. And that's why we have to have the managing authorities address this, because places are being loved to death. In the case of Venice, you're finding even environmental damage happening. It's not just social and cultural, or the fact that the economics aren't stacking up. It's also environmental. So, for instance, my understanding is the cruise ship wakes are actually leading to deterioration in the sides of the canals.
Can we stop the cruise ships? I believe that, you know, the residents are going up in small boats saying, go away, we don't want you. Are the cruise ships starting to listen to this?
Not to my knowledge. The cruise ships operate the way they do, and this is probably one of the fastest growing markets around the world, the cruise ship sector. Mm. People that have limited incomes or people with limited mobilities or families will find cruise ships attractive because they're all-inclusive and you know what you're paying for when you pay your cost. And they're easy. They've got the safety of the known environment, and the offshore visits are limited, maybe 6 or 8 hours that you have offshore to go experience the exotic. So it's a really high-demand space. But I'm hearing, even here in South Australia, that many of the ports that are beginning to host the cruise ships are beginning to feel, even in places like King's Coat. Have I got that right? I think it's King's Coat and Kangaroo Island. It might be Penashaw, or both of them are hosting the cruise ship visitors, that they're actually feeling overwhelmed when a cruise ship visits and drops people off.
Well, it doesn't just drop, it disgorges, doesn't it? So you're talking about this needs to be managed, and I believe in Venice they are now bringing in taxes and number restrictions. How far are they working, and what can be done better?
Well, it's not working. This last year has been really tough for the community. So they're looking at some pretty radical interventions. They tried the polite way of a tourist code to educate tourists, and then they tried tourist police, which were basically tourism ambassadors, to say, we here in Venice don't appreciate you eating your sandwich that you brought with you on the steps in the piazza, because that's basically rude. And while you're doing that, you haven't spent money in our beautiful cafes. The tourists complain, of course, that the cafes are expensive and you've got a table tax and all of that. But the Venetians see that as the price to come, that you spend money in the local economy. So those are two mild efforts that they've had, but it's not working. And it is the sheer volumes of people that want to come at the peak holiday seasons. And you're seeing the local people flee. That, I think, is one of the worst cases of examples of over-tourism, is when the impacts of the tourist, the expense of living in what is a very finite old part of the city, becomes so much. And then you also have lost your services because local shops and so on shut down and just become tourist-focused and tourist souvenir shops. So you're actually seeing the killing of the residential community by tourism. So that's a really hard case that we're looking at.
Really hard case. I mean, this is someone's life, their greengrocer, their hairdresser, their post office, and it's just being swallowed up by souvenir shops.
And generations of families with an attachment to that place who are basically being dispossessed and displaced by tourism. So that's why you're getting this really strong backlash to it happening. So Venice is looking at some extreme scenarios, such as major tourist taxes, cutting places off and directing people to less visited parts of the city, and doing that zoning, and also doing some things to make it preferential for local people. So, for instance, access to the ferries from the mainland to that part of Venice is one way that you create preferential pricing and preferential access that way. So Venice is getting strong on this. The other thing that I've mentioned in my article, which I liked, is the local community isn't sitting back and the local community is active.
I like this. Now tell me more about what the community – the community is not just waiting for its government leaders, is it? What is the community doing?
And this is a great example for the whole world to consider.
Yeah.
Together with the community of Amsterdam, because Amsterdam has also experienced some problems with the impacts of tourists, activists got together and are using a cooperative model to create something they're calling Fair B&B, which is to counteract the model of Airbnb with its disruptive technology and what some would argue is exploitative model of business. Fair B&B is going to be a cooperative of hosting properties, but under the community terms of what's important to have tourist host within places like Venice and Amsterdam. So, for instance, people who put the properties on that platform can only list one property. They can't be holders of five or six accommodations, which implies then that they're dispossessing the local residents making money that way.
And how far is this moving? Is this relatively new? Is this becoming entrenched? Tell us how the progress is going.
Well, it's new. And of course, like social activism, it will take time for the groups across the destinations to work together and to support each other. I think that Europe has a capacity to lead on this because they're used to the cooperatives. There are very strong cooperative movements in Europe as well as in Latin America. So I think they're setting an example, and the fact that it's multi-city is helpful, that communities are coming together to share and learn from each other and help each other in this.
Very powerful.
But the example that they show is that it comes from the grassroots. It's the local community that's creative, that knows their context, that knows their concerns, and then they can come up with models that suit the problems that they're facing. So we'll see more of this. I think that local communities are going to start to seize the tourism phenomenon to try to shape it for their interest.
Which makes very good sense, because tourism at its heart was not designed to be of economic benefit. As I understand it from my perspective, tourism was designed, going right back to, you know, the earliest things, was for the health of the traveller. It was the psychological benefits of seeing a different place, gaining another perception or perspective, coming back, having opportunities to think and reflect, just good for their health. That seems to have got lost between this sense of must see, must do, because it's social mediated, and the economic benefits to countries over that. How do you see where health benefits of travel fit in with all of this?
Well, I like that you're going back in history to talk about the origins of tourism, because if you go back to Thomas Cook, who's the one credited with creating the modern mass tourism phenomenon that we're under,
absolutely.
My understanding was his first train trip was for the workers that were in the factories and struggling with a really hard workload to give them a seaside visit. So it went a few kilometers from Loughborough to Leicester or something like that, so that those factory workers were getting that chance to enjoy the health benefits and the relaxation that the seaside offered. So that's a great start. Tourism helps people restore themselves. It connects them to the environment if it's ecotourism, and many people are talking about the healthy impacts of engaging with nature, and particularly as we get more urbanized, that becomes even more essential. Or the fact in the phenomenon, which your listeners may not have heard of, with social tourism, with families that struggle with poverty or with caring for a person in the family with disabilities or illness, that the tourism phenomenon can be a way that families reconnect and enjoy the company of each other, because we're living such hectic and fractured lives. So there is some elements of tourism that are so helpful. And, you know, as you know, my concerns with the local community. The other thing about the tourism phenomenon is it's a way for the local communities to connect with the outside world. If it's done right, the basis of tourism should be hospitality, where the local people are actually host. We use that term host community, but we don't use it thoughtfully about what it means. If the local community are the host, then the tourists are the guest. And in the philosophical or principles of hospitality, there are interactions and rules and protocols of behavior between host and guest. So you don't get invited into someone's home if you behave appallingly. You get expelled in that case. So this new way of thinking about tourism that I'm proposing, where it's based on the local community and their interest and their right to benefit from hosting visitors, invites us to go back to the original meaning of hospitality and to create that spirit. And my argument, you know, when we talk about the local community as hosts coming together with the tourist as visitors, you get a much better engagement, more meaningful engagement that fulfills both agents in the process.
That's actually a very good description of that mutual benefit between host and guest, opportunities to learn, opportunities to gain, and opportunities to interchange, which has just been lost, I think, under an overburden of economics at all levels. How can individuals make better decisions? How can people think about it? I mean, the focus on local travel is fabulous. And yes, I agree with you, the importance of social or supported travel for people who need assistance so they can get those regenerative, recuperative benefits are fabulous. But just tell me, to finish up, I understand there's a campaign, helpful or harmful? What sort of traveller are you? Can you tell us about that?
I can. The travelware company called Kathmandu did research in Australia and New Zealand where they surveyed a few thousand people about their travel habits, particularly to developing countries. And so this company used this to help generate a sense of responsibility on travelers. So the survey revealed some interesting things, such as 48% of the people they surveyed said they don't research the place they're visiting before they visit. So in talking about being a responsible tourist, when you go to another country, you need to understand their circumstances, their culture, even a few words of the language. That's the only way you get that hospitality happening, mm-hmm. is to engage with the local people. If not, you're quite isolated and alienated from them. So it's essential that we do that. So that research that they did in the helpful and harmful or harmful campaign actually alerts us to the fact that so many tourists or travelers are not researching in advance where they're going to understand issues that may confront that community, and also how they can be better behaved guests, and then how they could even arrange their travel so that they make the local community's lives better. The most simple way to do that is to find ways that you're spending money into the local community. Research what are the local foods and products and services that you can access, and actively avoid the multinational input into tourism and travel.
So that we do have a choice. And where can we find out more about helpful or harmful? Is there a website?
Yeah, go to the Kathmandu website for their responsible tourism information and you'll find it. And in addition to the report that they have, which show the results of the survey, they've got some great videos to also get you thinking about your travel choices. And the main point of all this is you'll have a better holiday.